worker, activist, leader, storyteller, organiser, carer, sister, friend, partner, writer, artist. Celebrate the contributions made by women in your community on March the 8th, International Women's Day.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, this International Women's Day. This is our 24-hour special broadcast all day. And for the next hour, we'll be listening to some of the speakers at an event held online on the 18th of February, hosted by Trades Hall Women. This was called Stand Up and Fight Back, Women on Strike. So in this discussion, we'll hear from rank-and-file delegates and leaders from across the movement about their experiences of taking industrial action over the past year. Here's Carolyn Dunbar, Women's Team Lead at Trades Hall, giving an introduction and some background to the session.
Thank you, Will, and congrats to everyone for being here for this event. As Will mentioned, it's an event that we're hosting as part of RawFest. So every March we host a Women's Rights at Work Festival, which is all about events and activities about our rights and safety at work, and in particular celebrating awesome working women who are standing up as union members and taking action to win. And tonight is all about taking industrial action. So we've invited three women who are delegates and leaders in their workplace and union and have been involved in action recently to fight for their rights and those of their workmates. But what is industrial action? Put simply, industrial action is when workers take action collectively in their workplace to advance their claims in bargaining. It's a powerful action and includes a range of different activities. So, for example, it might include things like writing on the outside of cars or ambulances, as we saw with paramedics, wearing union t-shirts. It might include things like work to rule, where workers refuse to do overtime, or things like bans on doing paperwork or responding to emails. In one case, back in 2020, the MUA, the Maritime Workers, Cooks and Caterers on Offshore Oil Rigs, voted to approve action to serve only cold meals, ban the service of meat, ban the service of coffee and birthday cakes as a way to put pressure on their employers to resolve their claims. So, you know, sometimes you've got to get creative and work out what's going to work. But most of you are probably familiar with industrial action as going on strike, so withdrawing your labour or stopping work. This can mean stopping work for a period of time, you know, 30 minutes or an hour to days at a time, or even indefinitely, as we saw with the Woolies strike recently. They went on strike until they got their deal indefinitely. And usually taking this type of action only happens as an escalation or a last resort, because your employer, your boss, isn't coming to the table on the things that are most important to your union members. So it is very powerful. It's one of the most powerful actions that workers can take. It's also pretty hard to go on strike legally in Australia. So legally, to take industrial action, you must have or be trying to get an enterprise agreement. Your enterprise agreement must have expired. You must apply to the Fair Work Commission to get a protected action ballot. You have to prove to the Fair Work Commission that you've been bargaining in good faith, that you're genuinely trying to reach agreement with your employer. You have to then get the ballot approved by the Fair Work Commission, have at least 50% of your members return their ballot, and have at least 50% of those who return their ballot approve the actions that you want to take. And then after all of that, you have to give your employer notice of the action that you're going to be taking. So it's pretty difficult, right? That's just the legality, but for a strike to be effective, it means that you have to have very good union membership and very good engagement at your workplace. It only works, of course, if you have a majority of workers stand together and participate. It also has to be disruptive. So it takes a huge amount of organisation, which means a huge amount of care for your workmates to decide to take that action. And of course, going on strike also means losing pay, which is a big deal for any worker to withdraw their labour and lose pay. So getting a work site or multiple work sites even to this point might take months or even years to organise and coordinate. To be effective. So when we're chatting with these awesome union women tonight and about the action that they took, we want you to be thinking about all of the on-the-ground organising, the sheer kind of grunt work, resolve, strength and solidarity that it takes to get there, but also the amazing things that can be achieved when it does happen. And finally, I mean, our movement is full of women who are ready to stand up and to fight back. There have been so many women who are leaders, delegates, union members stepping up and leading these actions and fighting for a really diverse range of workplace rights. So often it is pay, but it includes everything from fighting back against workplace surveillance and AI to fighting to win nurse-patient ratios or safe staffing levels, holding employers to account on cultural diversity or gender equality and more. So I really can't wait to hear from these amazing women on this panel. So I might hand back over to Will to introduce the speakers.
The folks that we've got with us tonight are Elaine. So she is an AEU Vic Vice President in their TAFE section. We've got Jordan, who is an ASU Vic Tas delegate at the Art Gallery of Ballarat, which is part of Ballarat Council. And each of them's going to introduce themselves and share a couple of minutes about themselves, their union, how they got involved in their union, and kind of the biggest issues in their industry or workplace. So I'm going to hand over to you first, Elaine.
Good evening, everyone. And I too would like to pay my respects to the traditional owners of the land in which we're meeting tonight. I too come from Wurundjeri and pay my respects to any First Nations people who are with us tonight. I, as Will said, I'm the Vice President of TAFE and Adult Provision at the Vic branch of the Australian Education Union. And I've been a union member since I was 13. My dad was a shop steward. You probably noticed that I have a bit of an accent. I come from a very Labour country, where the first question I got asked when I came home from my first job was, did you join the union? And I have been union since then. I have been an active union member, so I don't just pay my fees. I actually get up and do things. I do believe that a union membership is like a gym membership. You don't grow strength unless you get in there and participate. I have been with the Australian Education Union for probably 20 years now, but I have been in the leadership role for 7 years. A little bit about our strike action. We've been negotiating for over 2.5 years to get a better agreement for our standalone TAFEs. There's 12 standalone TAFEs. We needed to change the type of agreement that we had. We had an MEA, and under an MEA, we couldn't bargain. So the first steps that we had to take was to change the type of agreement that we had, and that took probably the best part of a year to do. And it was fairly significant with what we had with thousands of TAFE teachers, because it's not just members when you're doing the petition. You actually have to have everyone. So we had to take in all of the TAFE teachers across 100 plus campuses. So it was a big, big ask to get around and do that. That's why it took us the best part of a year to actually change the type of agreement that we had so that we could get there. And the main reasons for taking the strike action, we are a public entity, which means that we are governed by the public services wages policy of 3%, which is not good enough. We are way behind our school compadres who have similar qualifications and similar experience. We were about 7 or 8% behind them, so it wasn't good enough. They wanted to increase the amount of hours that we taught. And again, we were already having people with excess workloads. And they wanted to continue to have assessment not counted as teaching. So we had a lot of work to do to actually change things. And that's why we took industrial action.
Oh, I am so interested to hear a bit more about this as we go, Elaine. That's awesome.
The current world in which the higher education sector operates is characterized by profit and power. And as universities are further incorporated into global neoliberalism, these ideas of the public good face the most serious threat that they have ever faced. COVID pandemic, besides highlighting all of the other fissures in society, has also really highlighted the terrible inequalities that have long existed within the sector. The precarity, the overwork, declining mental health caused by intensifying privatization and the privileging of profits at all costs, and students who should be our co-learners in this process face mounting debt. If this pandemic has done nothing else, it has shown us that this system in its current iteration is unsustainable. We have to organize and fight against it. There is no other way. There is no alternative, to quote somebody who shall remain nameless.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
As we come marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand billows gray, a touch with all the radiance that a saddened sun discloses, for the people
to stay.
But in the meantime, I'm going to go to Jordan first.
Hello. So I'm Jordan. I work at the Art Gallery of Ballarat, which is part of the Ballarat City Council. I am very new to the union movement. I was aware of unions, obviously, like growing up and that, but didn't really know how to be a part of one or involved. I started at the council during COVID, so I didn't get my normal onboarding training where delegates actually do speak to new staff, which would have been great if I was from the start. But I'm coming up to about 2 years now, and I signed up because it was just as we were starting to negotiate our new enterprise agreement. And management were being sneaky about holding meetings about things like changing our hours for when we get overtime. And in that meeting where we ended up organising one outside of work hours with one of our organisers, we also found out that there was a clause in our enterprise agreement that said art gallery staff who undertake work on weekends are to be paid the applicable penalty rate, and none of us were being paid that. We didn't have an active delegate at the gallery either at the time, and so my colleague Jane and I, I was like, nope, this is not cool. I'm so going to go into this head first, but can I have someone to help me on the side? So Jane and I became delegates, and I just really became involved from there through our enterprise bargaining. And we were mainly fighting for, obviously, a wage increase. We are quite behind different councils of the same size and regional growth areas quite significantly. We've had a lot of, 1% pay increases. We were also trying to get rid of the rate cap on our pay increase, as well as our library workers. We only absorbed them a few years ago from... they were independent and now they're part of the council, and they hadn't had an actual proper wage increase that was the same as all their co-workers across different parts of council for almost 10 years. So there was quite a lot that we were fighting for, and we also hadn't had anyone really from any of the indoor workers such as ourselves at the gallery really take any industrial action before. It's my first time I've taken it. And we tried to turn it up to 11.
So I'm going to ask, so I'm going to follow up with that, Jordan. You were predominantly, it was pay increases and the rate cap. Do you want to talk a little bit more about what the claims were? What is it, what were the things that, what were the members fighting for?
Yeah, so initially their wage offer, they went, because we hadn't had a significant wage increase for a while. It was 3.5 the first year, 2.5 for the second year, and then 80% of the rate cap for the third year. And all our members voted that down consistently. We were aiming for 5.66 because that would have at least brought us to parity of places like Bendigo and Geelong. So unfortunately, we didn't get that, but we ended up getting 3.5, 3.5, 3.5. Which was really, that was a really, you know, strong win of ours. We also got disaster leave put in there. So for any of our residents that could have been affected by the fires, floods, stuff like that, they're able to take leave, and that's separate to their personal and annual leave, which was really great. We got minimum engagement hours standardised across like the whole workforce, because our main goal of that was some of our lowest paid workers, which is our school crossing supervisors, basically living below the poverty line, and they only agreed to our minimum engagement for the school crossing supervisors because when the new minimum wage increase was announced, they would have been below the minimum wage. So it was quite a hard fight. I mean, we've heard of places that have negotiated for over 12 months to 2 years, 3 years at ASU, but this is well over 12 months of stalling, actually ignoring us at the table and being like, we're going to break for Christmas, we'll pick this back up in the new year, then never picked it back up and put it out to a vote. So there's a lot of dirty tactics coming from management, just trying to push what they could through. But luckily, we ended up being able to organise across areas that we didn't normally have representation in, so like the childcare centre and our leisure centres. We finally get started getting into those places, which was really great, through them seeing workers like us at the art gallery writing on all the windows, and really being present, not just our outdoor workers, you know, not picking up the bins or not emptying the rubbish bins kind of thing, which was really amazing to see that it's like, hey, we're all in this together, we're fighting for you guys, like, we're fighting for everyone. We're here to sort of all push forward together.
That is awesome. Elaine, do you want to take us through, because you talked about the fact that workers, you were significantly behind kind of equivalent workers. Was wages kind of the main sticking point, or were there other things?
Yeah, wages was one of the key sticking points. Excessive workload was another. We had an agreement that we thought was a great agreement back in 2018. And then, unfortunately, we had a ruling at Fair Work that changed the way that we work. It took assessment out of teaching. And I think that was a massive loss for us. So in this agreement, it was really important that we get assessment put back into teaching because it was having a massive impact on the workload of people.
Can I ask about that? Is that because the TAFEs took that clause to Fair Work to be interpreted because effectively, even though a deal had been done, they decided they wanted the deal to be different?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Shocking, but yes, that was exactly what happened. The big wins that we got, the first pay rise when it comes through will be backdated to the 1st of November, and it's a 7.4% pay rise. We've got 3 years of 7%, so it's a minimum 21% pay rise over 4 years, which is much better than the public sector wages policy of 3%. We got assessment back in teaching, which was really important. We got workload reductions by having prep and correction time increase from 30 minutes to 45 minutes for every hour of teaching, which is really important. But one of the big wins for women is that we've got super paid on the unpaid portion of parental leave, which was a massive win that we got. We also got 12 extra weeks of parental leave for secondary caregivers, which is great. So it was really a good win, but it was a hard-fought battle to get those things. It didn't come easily.
This is 3CR's International Women's Day special broadcast. And right now we are listening to some of the voices at the Stand Up, Fight Back, Women on Strike webinar that was hosted by Trades Hall Women, held on the 18th of February this year in the lead up to International Women's Day.
Hello, 3CR listeners. I'm Giselle Hannah from Accent of Women and Asia Pacific Currents, and I'm appealing to you to subscribe to 3CR to keep radical voices on air. I've been a volunteer and broadcaster at 3CR for over 20 years, and I can say categorically that radical voices like ours that bring you stories of extraordinary, incredible women from across the world leading grassroots struggles, well, those voices just aren't welcome in the mainstream media. You won't hear about the struggle against Samsung's human rights abuses against its workers in South Korea. You won't hear about the plight of the Myanmar resistance against the coup on any other station, at least not the way we tell it here at 3CR. So be a comrade and go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 9419 8377.
You're listening to 3CR's International Women's Day special broadcast.
Elaine.
Yes.
Tell me about what kind of industrial action did you take?
Yeah, we started off with, we put 16 bans in place. We started off with fairly simple bans that we could get the majority of people to do because we wanted to bring people with us. As simple as putting on the AU red T-shirt and wear it red so it was very noticeable. Not putting in any attendance, which impacts how TAFEs are paid. Not answering phones, not answering any queries from their manager, which these are all ones that our members were really happy to take. So not answering the phone, not answering emails, not answering any questions from their employer. We also had them not attending meetings, which again was another one that they were really keen to do. When we started to ramp it up and really test people's solidarity and their willingness to be active, we started with stop works of just an hour. Then we took it to 2 hours. And then we took it to a full day stop work rally, which was amazing. It was one of the highlights of the whole thing. But the biggest thing that we did, because we took it from a two-pronged approach. So one is a political approach and the other one is an operational approach. So the ones that I discussed up until we took the stop work were all operational. It all hit the TAFE. The stop work action, the big rally, was a political move so that it was out there. It was seen by the public that they knew that there's not, you know, TAFE is at the heart of a lot of people. It's how the current government got in, saying that they were going to save TAFE. So it was a political move to put it out there to say that TAFE's not been saved, TAFE's been underfunded, and that we're understaffed and we're overworked. So it was putting that message out there that we did it in that two-pronged approach. The biggest impact that we had on the employers, though, was stopping putting results on. So we had lots of students without results. The students were great. The students were on board with us. We took them with us from the beginning, making sure that they were aware of it. I have to say, Trades Hall was a big part of that. Your rights at work, coming out to the TAFEs and teaching the students their rights at work from early on, meant that students had our backs right from the very beginning. And they turned up en masse as well. So without being invited, we didn't do the wrong thing. We didn't invite them. But they came and came in numbers to show their support, which was fantastic. So it was a really good campaign once we got the ball rolling. But we took it in steps to bring as many people with us as we possibly could.
And how about you, Jordan? What kind of industrial action did you take?
We also had a really big list because obviously councils have such a broad sort of coverage of indoor-outdoor workers. So we started off with, the first weekend that we started taking protective industrial action was Heritage Weekend in Ballarat. So a big part of one of the things was being able to talk to the public about why we were doing this. So we covered all the windows at the front of the gallery, as well as there's a big clear glass building that's attached to the back, in just signs just illustrating what we were taking industrial action for. And it got cleaned off 3 times in 2 days. Basically, nearly every day that we wrote on the windows, we just kept putting it back up. We made announcements over our PA system, which our management really did not enjoy. We had a petition, which the public, when we were making these announcements, were like, sign our petition if you support like a livable wage increase for the council workers. And we had so many people being like, hell yeah. I don't think we met anyone from the general public that wasn't supportive, which was amazing. We had our street cleaners only doing some streets. Our parking officers weren't issuing fines, so that was fun. And that's how we got the Courier, the local paper, into it. One of the delegates from the street parking saw a car that belonged to someone at the Courier and issued them a fine, but it said $0. And so they asked about it, and and that's how we ended up talking to the news. So I ended up on the front cover as well as on local news talking about our action. As a team, we just really, like, it was so good being like, I was happy to take the heat at the gallery because I am a permanent part-time worker. I have that protection of my hours can't be cut kind of thing, but we are a highly casualized workforce. But it was really like great to see the support from our casuals, you know, like wearing the t-shirts. And then when we finally did ramp it up to taking stop work, it was White Night in Ballarat. It was the first time in a few years that we had it again, and we were going to have like 30,000 people descend on Ballarat for White Night, and a lot of them coming through the doors of the gallery, and on a Saturday night when none of us getting weekend penalty rates. So we were like, you know, we voted amongst members, and so we had the street cleaners were not emptying the rubbish. They normally help. They have internal crews sort of that they hire, external, to help with it. There was just overflowing rubbish everywhere. The actual garbage collectors, they stopped as well for a whole day leading up to it. So there was just this absolute onslaught of rubbish. As well as on the hour, every hour at the gallery, we took little strikes. Just because of our casual workers, we just really didn't want to put them under some immense pressure, but they were really supportive. We also had members MPs that were there at that night for the opening of White Night who stood in solidarity with us, which was really great. Yeah, we did a lot of – oh, we also protested the official opening of the library. So none of the library workers, they're all fully unionised at the library, so they all stood out the front. And also our MPs didn't cross the picket line. They stood with us and they were supposed to be officially opening that. And that ended up on the TV as well. So that was pretty fun.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going to go now and ask Elaine, what are you proudest of? In the whole, what you've achieved, what are you proudest of?
My proudest moment has to be standing in front of hundreds of people wearing red at the Athenaeum Theatre when we took the full day rally and then marched from there to Parliament. And we had speakers on the steps of Parliament. We've never been able to take industrial action before. So we had to bring people with us from the very beginning. And to get that number of people, hundreds of people wearing red at the Athenaeum, on the march, out the front of Parliament, it was just the best outcome that we could have had. We've taken unprotected action in the past because we had an MEA, but to be able to take protected industrial action and to take it en masse, amazing, just amazing.
This is 3CR's International Women's Day special broadcast. And right now we are listening to some of the voices at the Stand Up, Fight Back, Women on Strike webinar that was hosted by Trades Hall Women, held on the 18th of February this year in the lead up to International Women's Day.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses' Federation in Victoria. Throughout the Nurses' Dispute in 1986 and the Waterfront Dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there, broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio and we're broadcasting live from the Baeda Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR. Radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
The three of us reckon
3CR is the best.
And how about you, Jordan? What's the thing that you're proudest of in all of that?
I think for us it was just being able to, we organised so much in such a short period of time at the gallery as well as all these other places. But I think knowing that we had, you know, we had delegates from school crossing supervisors, outdoor workers, so in waste and in parks and rec kind of thing, and a couple of indoor places, that we actually were so in this together that we would, you know, we had people being like, all right, we're going to drive the trucks down to the gallery. Can you guys write on the trucks for us? Because we don't think our handwriting's good enough. And just how much we were able to work together. And I think we had like, we had over 100 member sign-ups just in like a really short period of time from what we were doing. So I think that in itself was just really special. And I think meant a lot to some of our longstanding delegates who had been taking protected action, you know, they've been at the council for, you know, 10, maybe 15, 20 years, and not having had the solidarity across as many work sites as they had before. So I think that was the thing that I was most proud of, that it was making everyone aware that we're all in this together. That was pretty special.
What do you reckon in terms of opportunities? You did the same, right? There were opportunities for you with gallery openings and things like that that you could step in. Were there particular challenges and what do you reckon you've learnt in all of this?
Well, we had a challenge of we hired, I think, 9 new casuals halfway through taking protected industrial action. So we'd managed to basically have like a fully organised front of house team, back of house, to about 3/4. And then they added another 9 staff that were like, okay, we're going to get these people organized. And I think I got to about half of them and I've gotten to the other half by now. just being able to use those people skills or putting them into, and your powers as, I don't know, just as a delegate, but also as just like a workmate. Like when you are on that same level as like you're not a manager, it's like I'm fighting for you. You know, they're not necessarily fighting for you. We are very lucky to have a very supportive manager that sort of looks after all of the front of house people. But there were some difficult times with, we did have our jobs threatened by one of the higher ups at the gallery. So that was a bit scary, and that was aimed at a casual and a permanent part-time staff, but it's okay. We got an angry letter from ASU and the lawyers because we couldn't do that because what we were doing was protected action. It was a bit of overwhelming pressure because I think I ended up being kind of the face of it, you know, unintentionally, because I just was so just pushed everything out so much. But in saying that, I really learned the value of just solidarity and workmates, being your workmates and having that support from the public and from the union, and then being like, hey, we're on your side. And if, you know, you've had a really rough couple of weeks because, you know, you've had your job, your work colleagues, it wasn't even me, the job threatened kind of thing. And you feel, and I felt like that was because of me. You know, had a bit of a cry, but then have like my delegate and the really nice work manager come over to my house and be like, hey, it's okay. We're all in this together. You haven't done anything wrong. You know, we're going to get through this. And we did. I will say that a council are apparently still a bit salty, so that's a bit funny. We were allowed to organise barbecues and breakfast for our members to be like, thanks for all the hard work. But they turned around and said that we wouldn't do it on, that we had to do it in our own time, and they wouldn't give us paid leave for that because they were, quote, still upset about the protected industrial action we took. So that was a bit funny. But, yeah.
So it sounds like they've learned a lesson as well in the process. There's been much growth and learning on the part of everybody in these things. Tell me about... So it sounds like one of the challenges was just the size of the task that you had in terms of getting that number of workers organised. So yep. What did you learn from all of that?
I learned communication is extremely important. And when you think you've communicated enough, communicate more. And different forms of communication. We did it via text. We did it via email. We did it through calls. And we're very lucky to have Lily with us at the time, who was wonderful at actually giving up her time to make calls and do all of those things so that we made sure that we had everyone on board. The biggest opportunity that you have during industrial action is member growth. It has to be member growth. Only members can take action. And by having actions that people wanted to do meant that we were growing exponentially. At one point, we had met our monthly target and exceeded it by about 560%. It was a phenomenal amount. We grew every single month. It was amazing. But yes, the biggest challenge we had was being aware of bringing everyone with us when it's that number of people, and being aware of campaign fatigue. We had to have a really good campaign. We had to have a really good strategy. And we had to listen to what the members were telling us. As Rachel and Jordan had said, we had people who were gung-ho, would have walked out the first day. And then we had others who were really not sure. And we had to bring all of those people with us. So it's been able to understand where each person's coming from, and to be able to work with what's in it for them that would bring them with us, and being able to find their trigger points, what would make them take action. And that was probably the biggest challenge when there was that number of people.
It sounds to me like for all three of you, the kind of key thing that happened was there were key moments where everybody was operating together in collective and the energy that everybody got from that really helped drive things along. So I'm going to thank our awesome panelists tonight for coming and being part of this, but also just for being totally awesome and for driving industrial action at their workplaces, taking strike action, as Caro said right at the start. It's a big thing to do. The law is sometimes complicated and can make it hard. But I think what we get from all three of those stories is that when workers come together and they gas each other up and do that work in numbers and G each other up, that really you absolutely can get it done. I'm just going to remind everyone that tonight's event is part of RawFest, that we have lots of other events, both online and also some in-person events. And all of our online events are about how we can use the changes to the laws that have happened under this government to win, and that includes coming together and taking strike action. So we've got a little bit of time remaining, so I think I'm going to hand over now to Lily.
Hey, everyone. I'm a women's organiser here at Trades Hall, and kind of following on from Elaine, Rachel and Jordan sharing their powerful stories of collective action, there's a lot at stake happening this International Women's Day. Women's and workers' rights under attack all around the world. And we've seen threats to our working conditions, threats to our reproductive rights, and women being killed and injured by male violence. But there's also been massive wins last year as well, or in the past few years, so particularly at work. There's been early childhood educators and aged care workers winning pay rises and respect for their work, more women getting organised to fight back against the pay gap. We've won super on parental leave, the positive duty to prevent sexual harassment, and better rights to secure more flexible jobs. And these changes wouldn't have happened without the power of union women coming together and fighting for them.
And if COVID has shown anything, no government in Australia has had a planned approach to safety in terms of workers under COVID. Everything's been done knee-jerk. So whilst you've got market capitalism operating from a market perspective, we're only ever going to get knee-jerk things which involve huge exploitation, inequity and racism. None of these things are being planned or addressed in any long-term way. It's all stopgap and knee-jerk, and it is because of the role of the market.
Subscribe to 3CR, Workers' Rights and Union Struggles. Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
And you're on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, digital and streaming online at 3cr.org.au and on the Community Radio Plus app. We've been listening to some discussion from the webinar held by Trades Hall Women on the 18th of February this year, called Stand Up, Fight Back, Women on Strike. And this was all about rank and file delegates and leaders in the movement talking about some industrial actions and their experiences with them across the past year. Hope you've enjoyed it, and stay tuned to 3CR all day today for our International Women's Day special broadcast.
It took a hammer, an act of love, to turn that gentle into a dove. It took some courage, it took some strength, to stop that fighter from dealing death. Into the hangar, into the plane. Now use your hammer to stop the pain. And steady breathing as your work starts. For strong women, beating heart.
courage, it took some strength to stop that fighter from dealing death. You sang of justice, you rang the bell, you drove your hammer through Timor's hell. You won your freedom, but you won more. You stopped a death plane from making war. For strong women with hammers high, beating plowshares for a peaceful sky. They know the struggle, they know the cause. Whoever prophets keeps making war. Some courage, it took some strength to stop that fighter from dealing death. It took a hammer, an act of love, to turn that jet into a dove. It took some courage, it took some strength from dealing death. For strong wind